When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to Your Booked, the podcast for literary nosy parkers. I'm Daisy Buchanan, your host and the author of The Sisterhood, a love letter to the women who shape me. For our fifth series of Your Booked, we're in the USA, and today we're in Brooklyn, home to Henry Miller, Truman Capote, and today's guest, Gabrielle Moss. Gabrielle wrote one of the very best presents I got for Christmas 2018, Paperback Crush, the totally radical history of 80s and 90s teen fiction. It is a thorough, consuming, compelling exploration of its subject, academic, referential, but giddy with joy. As I swooned over the pages, and she treats the Babysitter's Club with the utmost respect and tenderness, I'm glad to say, a plan formed in my mind. I could go to New York and try to interview Gabby for the podcast. Just imagine her book collection. Well, I no longer need to imagine, and neither do you. We had a wonderful time with Gabby, discovering the finest pulp fiction, letters falling out of loaned books, and Peggy Bundy memorabilia along the way.
It's not quite gotten to the point of being a hoarder yet, but I'm like, could it go that way over the next 20 years?
Before we get to the books, and obviously the books are over here, I want to ask you about your Hello Kitty toaster, because I've wanted one of those my whole life, and I wasn't even sure they existed.
Oh, yeah, I mean, my only answer for why I own a Hello Kitty toaster is I'm terrible with money. I don't know how to not buy something that just looks fun. And supposedly the Hello Kitty toaster is supposed to imprint Hello Kitty's face on your toast.
Oh, wow.
But you do have to set it to the nearly burnt setting to get that effect. If you want a reasonable piece of toast, it's not going to.
Aesthetics over tastiness. Yeah. Yeah, honestly, I wouldn't trust anyone who was in a position to buy one of those and didn't do it. So I think you did the right thing. I want to ask you about this book, which is the first thing I saw when I came in. You have Margot Tenenbaum's book. May I take it down?
So
is this
Inside, it is not Margot Tenenbaum's book.
Inside, it's The Modern Library, the 200 best novels in English since 1950, which sounds like a really great book.
So the story of why I have that, I also have, you can see this fake Eli Cash book, also from Royal Tenenbaum's. And the answer to that is that, and I don't sound like a good person in this story, I used to work in book publishing. I used to be an editor at Penguin over a decade ago. And they'd have these very wild Halloween parties where people would decorate their little departmental area around a theme. And then after that, everyone in the company would drink very, very, very much at like 2 p.m. And one year, I had drank very, very much at 3 p.m. and I just picked this book up and walked out with it.
Again, if the opportunity is there, how could you not? It's a long-term loan. It's a work bonus.
This heavy drinking Halloween party is also why I have a plastic lawn deer in the kitchen that my husband and I have adopted as our child.
Could you just pick that up and look out with it?
I mean, there's a reason publishing's falling apart.
It's because all the stuff is here. Does the lawn deer have a name?
The deer's name is Deary Lou.
Deary Lou, and it's Deary Lou's birthday because we are recording.
It is Deary Lou's birthday. Happy birthday, Deary Lou.
Oh, and on the Halloween theme, you have Prominent American Ghosts by Susie Smith. A fascinating investigation of the tales and legends surrounding famous and not so famous American haunts and hauntings. Oh, is that the Susie Smith?
Oh, there is a The Susie Smith?
I thought she was quite a well-known, like, gossip columnist. But she has been a reporter on a small-town weekly newspaper, a columnist of the Salt Lake Tribune, and a publisher of her own buyer's guide, Shopping with Susie.
The story with prominent American ghosts, and also a lot of the books here, is that I collect, and also at this point people just give me books with funny covers, interesting titles. It's my sort of, years ago, I started kind of developing a passion for these, which led into, eventually, Paperback Crush, just kind of picking up things because I thought they were entertaining looking, and obviously it became much more. But on my bookshelf, I have arranged a lot of the finds that I am the most proud of.
Do you like spooky stories? Do you like
And I love spooky. This was a gift. Prominent American Ghost was a gift, and it was a gift because it was about ghosts. But I just thought the title was so funny. Like, you know, you think of a prominent businessman, not a prominent ghost.
Imagine the lesser-known ghost being quite offended. Like, excuse me? I think you'll find I was at a haunting in 1972 and again in 1979.
Everyone's blowing them off and it's very sad.
On the spooky theme, because, you know, what we've been walking through. I love how people really go for it here with, like, you know, window dressing and decorations. And,
I know. I hear it's not as much of a thing in the UK, right?
No, it's becoming more of a thing, for sure. But it's, you know, compared with, like, oh, Halloween's really taking over. Then you get here and, like, oh, we've got a long way to go. Do you have any point horror? I know I really enjoyed the point horror part in Paperback Crush.
I do have point horror. So my Paperback Crush books, I don't know if I should drag them out here. So they are in, there are about 200 of them, and they are just in cardboard boxes in my study. They became too much for me to manage. So these are the boxes. I can take them out into the hall. They're eventually going to be part of the New York University archive because it's just too much for me to handle personally.
Oh my God, that's so cool. But is it going to be like your curation?
Yeah, it's just going to be all the books that were used in Paperback Crush and then anyone can come look at them. So let me drag a few of these boxes out here and we can...
Oh, wow.
But they're all in
look
here.
At this. I do not know The Trouble with Wednesdays by Laura Nathanson, but that is that illustration on the front of, I don't know who that girl is supposed to be. Is she in like a Planned Parenthood? Oh no, she's getting a toothbrush.
She's getting her toothbrush. That's actually a very depressing problem novel, educational novel about she's being molested by her dentist.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
oh.
Yeah. So, you know, so many, they're sort of... I put them in these boxes willy-nilly.
Do you think Margaret Atwood read this? Because that happens in The Testaments.
Wait, really?
Sorry, favourite point horror.
Favourite point horror. What are they? These are not point horror. These are Fear Street.
R.L. Stine's... So Fear Street is the lesser-known franchise compared with Goosebumps?
I would say Goosebumps is more successful. Fear Street came first.
I'm sure Fear Street did very well.
Fear Street did well, but I mean, Goosebumps was... I interviewed R.L. a year or two ago, and Fear Street was... I think, good for him, Goosebumps was the thing that, like, changed his life completely.
Because am I right in thinking that he... I think I've read interviews where it sounds like his relationship with Goosebumps is quite complicated. That I think he's a bit freaked out by the intense Goosebumps fandom, or... Is he just a bit more wry about it?
I think he's just... I got the impression that he was wry about almost everything. That, you know, I think anyone probably has a complicated relationship with their... The thing that made them super famous. A problem I hope to someday deal with.
I am certain that's going to be the case. Can we ask you about your new book?
Sure. All right, sure. Oh, it's just... for the listener, my new book is currently in the form of just a series of post-it notes stuck upon three different poster boards.
It's very exciting because I can see it. They're the neatest post-its I've ever seen, both in handwriting and in the way they are placed on the board.
Well, thank you. It's very polite. I have felt, when I've been setting these up over the past few months, I feel like I'm just like a person when they make the murder boards on TV with the threads going to this, the threads going to that.
Like Charlie and It's Always Sunny, gift where he's...
Yeah, this is my Pepe Silva board. the book I'm working on now is... a memoir about my relationship with my mother, which is pretty bad, but I'm hoping the book is funny, so we'll see.
Is your mum, she a reader? Did you have a lot of books growing up?
Interestingly, I did not have a lot of... I had a lot of, you know, children's books and picture books. We didn't have a house full of books. If I think back on our bookshelves when I was a kid, we had some of my mom's trendy books from the 70s. Have you ever heard of a book called Fear of Flying?
Yes.
You know, very trendy books my mother had had while she was a single girl in the 70s.
My Secret Garden.
Yeah, all of those things. And then a series of Time Life home improvement books. These were American books about how to do repairs on, like, your bathroom.
So these are the ones where you get, like, a library, and it's, yes, like, 4 of 17 hammers.
Yes, you buy it. Back then, you bought it from calling an 800 number, and then it would just, you know, all these instructions for fixing your own pipes that people would then get the books and be like, I can't do this. but I was very, once I learned to read, I was very interested in reading. And so I did read all of those Time Life books. And so I think I can repair a sink, even though I can't.
Well, I trust you to do it. I think you'd be a great plumber.
You're a nice person, but you make foolish choices.
I do live in a very leaky house. I meet loads of people who I think could be good plumbers. Always goes wrong for me. Did you read Fear of Flying?
I did end up reading Fear of Flying. So when I was very little, you know, I went to like a hippie preschool in kindergarten where you just played with blocks and no one bothered trying to make you learn anything.
So whereabouts was this? Did you grow up around here in New York?
I grew up in Connecticut. I grew up in suburban Connecticut and
near Stony Brook.
I think theoretically near Stony Brook. It took me a long time to figure out that Stony Brook was not real. but I think I grew up probably not super far from the concept of Stony Brook. I didn't know how to read when I started in our public school system in the first grade, and I sort of taught myself how in, like, a rage, because I was so mad that people thought I was stupid for not being able to read. So I just took all these workbooks home with me, and I would just be, like, filling them out all angry and, like, 6 years old. And then after that, I got very into reading and, yeah, read every book in our house, including Fear of Flying. Who knows what damage that did?
Did he get it? Did it introduce you to new things, or did a lot of it just go over your head? Like,
I think a lot of it.
Was that, like, a small animal?
I think almost all of it went over my head, and I was just like, wow, being an adult is exciting. Turns out it's not.
Because, you know, other than all, you know, all the sex, all the zipless fucks, she does a lot of travel.
I know.
She has really good fights with her husband, very sort of adult arguments.
It was a level of adulthood that still seems 1,000 years. I mean, even, like, she's taking baths all the time. I'm like, where do you have this nice apartment with a beautiful bathtub? Like, were things that different in the 70s?
I've just spotted a book on your shelf, and I suspect it comes under that, you know, things that someone has seen and has thought, like, Gabby will love this. Clairvoyance in Women looks great. Yes. And I feel like we're in a time now when that's all kind of coming back in a big way. It's got very...
It is. Yeah. We're having a very 70s moment, I think, with the astrology and the tarot cards. Before you came here... Endemic sexism and racism. Everything old is new again. but yeah, Clairvoyance in Women was a gift from my best friend, who is responsible for a number of my finds here. She knows what I'm looking for in a showpiece book very well.
If we were to have a sort of Halloween seance right now, you know, we're going to get a Ouija board and sort of summon some authors who are no longer with us. Who would you like to call up, and what would you ask them?
Oh my God, I feel like I know who I would call up, but then not who I would... I feel like it would just be an awkward party where everyone's standing around afterwards.
Like, so you're Shakespeare, William? Who would you get in touch with?
I mean, I feel almost like even the big gets, your Shakespeare's, your Dorothy Parker's, I'm like, there are too many demands on their time. I'm not going to be able to get in there. I mean, if we had a seance right now... I don't know, Lois Duncan?
Oh, remind me.
She is I Know What You Did Last Summer. A lot of teen thriller books from the 60s and 70s that were turned into not very great teen movies in the 90s. I read a bunch of her books for Paperback Crush, and it turns out they are so much better than how they're perceived in the culture.
I remember now in reading it, like, this is dark. This is quite disturbing stuff.
Yeah, she has such an interesting career. She had been writing kind of, I don't want to call them Sufi romance novels, but she had been writing much lighter fare for teens, and then kind of just had a brainwave that she wanted to write this incredibly dark novel called Ransom, and her publishers were so opposed and thought it was horrific, and instead it was a huge hit, and she kind of created the world of the teen thriller in doing that.
I was getting a mix with Lois Lowry. It's very different.
And very much alive, I think, slash hope.
Oh, sorry. This, I remember this from, this is Lois Duncan.
Yes.
Right? So, remind me, this is a true life
book. This is a true life book. So, Lois Duncan, towards the tail end of her career, her daughter was very tragically murdered in a crime that remains essentially unsolved to this day. And this is one of Duncan's last books. She sort of retired from writing after her daughter's death. And if you read Who Killed My Daughter, you'll see that she seems to almost blame herself for having written about all this darkness for so many years, as if it was her fault for bringing that into her family's life.
Oh, my God. I mean, it's such a... Because this book was huge,
yeah,
right? It really... But I guess, again, true crime, something that we still love. But I mean, all I can say to anyone listening is if you've not read Gabby's brilliant, brilliant book, the detail, and it's really just the facts around this book and how it came into be, and Lois Duncan's career is so chilling and so compelling.
Yeah.
I might have put this down because I feel a bit, I don't really like holding it. I've just seen that I Want My MTV book. I think that might be one of producer Dale's favourite books. Mm. Is that the oral history one? Have you
Yes.
read that?
Yes. That is one of my favourites. That book is pure delight. So many stories about Duran Duran being off their heads on cocaine on a yacht.
Toto. Oh, my God. Toto. They had, no wonder they only had two songs.
The amount of bad behavior going on in that book that everyone's just happy and free to admit to. It was amazing.
Well, I love, like, throughout, it's just everyone constantly contradicting each other and saying, no, it was nothing like that, but the, you know, the cocaine and Duran Duran and Toto. That's the one thing that, like, no one challenges that.
I got so into reading that book that afterwards I was like, I want to read John Taylor from Duran Duran's memoir because, like, there must be so much more. But I found that it wasn't as satisfying to me as just all these different voices of all these different people screaming, like, cocaine, excess, yachts, we wanted to go on a yacht. And then we had to find a way to justify it, so we made the Rio video.
Did you read that book, Daisy Jones and the Six?
I've not read it yet, so another feature of my home, because I worked in book publishing and then after that at a website where we got a lot of review copies, is I have about 100 unread books in my study. Daisy Jones is one of them. They're what is on a big piles like tumors all over my floor in here.
So what do you think, what's the first thing you'd like to wrestle from that pile? If I gave you like a week... You know, if I said, I'm going to stop time. Everyone else is just like this. Gabby, you get a week to read anything you want from that pile. What would you go for first?
Oh, my God. The first thing I would like to pull out of that pile, and I'm afraid we're making this a little too Halloween themed, but the truth is that I'm a dark, icky person. there is a memoir called Member of the Family by Diane Lake. She was someone who was a member of the Manson family.
Oh, wow.
As a 13-year-old girl.
Oh,
and I've not been able to find the time to read it since I picked it up last year, but I am very, very eager to. And if all my responsibilities stopped, I would love to just sit down and read that one.
What's that bit? That looks a bit Manson-y. Oh, Ladies of Pop and Rock. It's the hair.
You know,
it's the very shiny, very flat, dark hair.
We think of that as Manson hair, but I think that was everyone's hair in the 60s and 70s. He's just sadly enduring example.
It was just during the murder period that was the look. Janice Ian's feelings about parents, school, and music. Read about Tina Turner and how she copes with her husband. That's quite gently euphemistic. Discover what makes Cass Elliot of the famed Mamas and Papas tick. I feel sad that they had to explain who Cass Elliot is.
I mean, this is one of the great things about collecting these kind of historical books that didn't stand the test of time is just finding out stuff like that, finding out how these things were viewed at the time that, you know, Cass Elliot, who I think we would all instantly recognize now, you'd be like, which one is she? Which band is she in?
There's a version of Otis Redding's Respect, which is a knockout.
The sexuality is strident, abrasive, liberated as she, Tina Turner, growls to the audience, "I'm gonna speak tonight for us women. We hardly ever get what we want. Ain't that right, girls?" We shout back, "Yes, Tina, right on."
So dark in context.
And I think we've had other guests who've got this book, The Gigi Boone Diary, but that is a beautiful edition.
Yes, no, it's...
Have you ever met her?
I've never met her. I've always wanted to go to the bookstore she runs in Florida, but I have not been able, basically, I've not been able to convince my husband to organize a vacation around that yet. But I bought this off eBay, and it was partially filled in by... a girl. My name is Jessica. Please call me Jessica. I like cheerleading math boys. I hate Anne Lavin, Jory Weinstein, and dissecting. This year at school, I plan to get good grades.
Oh. And then Anne Lavin, Jane Weinstein, if you know what you did to Jessica, please get in touch and tell us.
And she didn't go any further in this diary, so whatever they did to her was real bad, threw her off course.
Maybe she killed her.
Spooky.
Shall we go in the study? Is that okay?
And oh, yeah, sure.
Oh, maybe before we go, it's another fabulous display book. I don't know if you've actually read it. I've just seen Leda's Own Erotica.
That is another gift given to me.
Oh, my... Oh, look at these. This is a fabulous part. So we have Leda's Own Erotica, the irresistible bestseller by the Kensington Ladies Erotica Society. Oh, my God. It's... I don't know where this is published. Kensington, I'm sure you know, is a very upmarket area of southwest London. But here, it's amazing how it's sort of a shorthand. But like, we were in a bar and they had Mr. Kensington tomato ketchup. It was like, well, clearly it's a fancy, elegant ketchup Kensington.
I mean, that's so much of everything from the UK here, you know, you throw the name of a UK place on the front of something and that's how you know it's supposed to be classic.
We have Zaviera Goes Wild by Zaviera Hollander, All New Adventures of the Happy Hooker. I've seen loads of references to the Happy Hooker, but never really known what this was.
It was a huge memoir in the 70s, and obviously she wrote several sequels by this woman who was a sex worker, and it was kind of part of the... When the sexual revolution went kind of mainstream and got into mainstream book publishing, her book was one of the first, you know, huge hits.
Would you like to read this paragraph or shall I?
Starting with
Andreas' eyes opened.
Andreas' eyes opened, and I'll swear that his prick rose in time to his eyelids. In a flash, it stirred from a sleep boner to a big, hard, fuck-ready erection. I went down on him, gobbling deep and wet, tightening my lips around an enlarged head. I maybe just discovered some shame I didn't know I had. That is as far as I can go with this paragraph.
I can see why that was so successful.
It was very, very successful.
Here we have Sherry Height, the other end of the scale. Sexual Honesty by Women for Women. Written anonymously by women 14 to 64 in response to a nationwide questionnaire on their sexuality. So is this the Height Report or is this
one of the many books spun off from the Height Report, which was so successful. They were like, let's milk it for all. You know, it's like when a book's popular and they're like, here's the workbook version. Here's the quote a day version. So this is kind of the quote a day version where she's just using raw answers from the Height Report and just turning them into
so
a film book.
Kind of the three women of its day, I guess.
It really was. I had not thought of that. But yeah, everything is circular.
Everything comes back around.
Astrology, all of it.
And saving the best for last.
And this is, I believe it's an Urdu edition of Sweet Valley High. Many, 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 many years ago, my first job out of college was working at the literary agency that handled Sweet Valley High. And this was one of the perks of working there was that you could take home unclaimed foreign rights copies. So I have this.
Oh, what? So do you know whether they were translated or if they're completely separate stories that were written for that market?
Oh, I believe they're translated. I believe they're translated.
Did you ever write any Sweet Valley High books?
No.
Did you ever have a go? Did you ever fancy it?
Oh, I mean, I think, who wouldn't want to write a Sweet Valley High book?
Are they still being published?
They're not. They're republishing some of the old ones. The interesting thing about that is they've started republishing a lot of books from the 90s as, you know, women of our generation have kids and want to foist these books on them. But the Babysitter's Club republish has been very successful, and the Sweet Valley High much less so.
That's really interesting. Why do you think that is?
I mean, I think there's sort of... a warmth to the Babysitter's Club, and, you know, the way they republish these books will usually be to take out outdated references. You know, now people have cell phones and whatnot. But I do think there is a real...
It's not Claudia's phone anymore. It's a WhatsApp group.
I mean,
the whole premise is ruined.
Yeah, I suppose they wouldn't have to meet it. I mean, they'd have to admit that they were meeting just because they love each other. Emotional honesty. And the snacks. But yeah, Sweet Valley High has not had the same success in being repackaged. I think it's very 80s, very Reagan era kind of gimme kind of stuff.
That Fiat Spider, the Levalier necklace. I think I saw like a Levalier pendant on a website quite recently. I'm like, that's what that is. I do wonder whether the Babysitter's Club, rather, it's such a sort of middle grade universe. Like, if I had 10-year-old kids, or younger kids, to be honest, I'd be like, well, this is fine for you. They're sort of, these girls are like 12 or 13, but it's a very safe universe. I don't know. I feel like Sweet Valley is a universe that you have to kind of discover independently, and you don't want, hey, children, meet Bruce Patman and Lila Fowler. They're the worst.
I mean, it does seem like you have to discover Sweet Valley High on your own because it's so, you know, it was the Gossip Girl of its day. It was so superficial and wild. Is that that?
We've just found.
Oh, yeah. That's the same one.
Tape. Ah!
So this was my...
All Night Long.
Two different copies of All Night Long. The other one is on two cassette tapes, I believe. Books on tape.
So what happens in All Night Long? Can you remember?
I believe Jessica goes out to a beach party with some older guy based on these covers. He's supposed to be in college, but look at that mustache.
He looks like Freddie Mercury.
He looks exactly like Freddie Mercury. So Jessica goes to a beach party with a guy who looks exactly like Freddie Mercury in like his mid-30s, but he's supposedly a college guy. And then I believe... This is all in memory. I believe they almost have sex and then she like slaps him in the face and runs away or something.
He's much more experienced than anyone Jessica's ever dated. Someone who isn't about to take no for an answer. Elizabeth is afraid of what might happen to her sister. Has she gone too far? Why has Jessica stayed out all night long? Is she as grown up as she thinks she is? And the best thing is, on the back, there is a sweepstakes promotion. Grand prize, a trip for three to New York. So presumably that's your best friend and your mother. To meet Francine Pascal, see a Broadway play, and participate in a Sweet Valley High recording session. Do you think anyone ever claimed that prize? Can we enter? The three of us could go.
I assume that someone has claimed all of these. In the back of all of these Sweet Valley High things, one of the most pleasurable things about going through the old ones is all the coupons for the contests, and they're always bizarre offerings like that. Like a Broadway show, what does that have to do with Sweet Valley High?
But there should be a Sweet Valley High musical.
We're copywriting that idea right now. Don't steal it from us. It is ours.
We can write the book. Can you make up songs? We can do the lyrics.
Sure we can.
Ooh, Nice Girls Don't by Caroline B. Cooney. I remember, I'm sure, at my school, there were loads of Caroline B. Cooney books. I don't know where they came from, but they were...
She wrote, her big hit came a few years after this. It was called The Face on the Milk Carton.
Oh, yeah.
Which was about child abductions, which everyone was very worried about, at least in the US in the 80s and 90s. I don't know if it was as big a public obsession in the UK.
Well, in the UK at that time, for the most part, our milk came in bottles and they got delivered, so there wasn't really anywhere to put the missing kids. So maybe they were like, oh, we can't really abduct children because it's not fair. There's no way for the parents to contact them.
You guys were like, milk carton? What are you talking about? But prior to that, she had written a lot of series books for romances and horror lines, mystery lines, and so this is from Wildfire, which is one of the earliest 80s teen lines, and this is a very well-written romance novel about some high schoolers. I'm looking at this, I'm like, what is this?
There's a card in there.
There's a
you.
Card. Oh my god, there is a card. Who It's sealed? What the hell is this?
It's another thrilling mystery.
What on earth could this be?
It's a milk carton.
Thank you. Thank you so much for... Oh my god! I lent this book to a library in Oregon, and they mailed them back to me. They were doing a display to... This made me feel old. They were doing a display to teach children about the books of the 80s and 90s as if they were antique artifacts. So they put these books next to landline phones and a Cyndi Lauper album, I believe, and like a Caboodles makeup carrier. So this is a thank you note from one of the librarians that I found about a year after the fact. So thank you. Thank you for this nice note.
So does that come up a lot? Do you do lots of work with libraries and kind of academic archives?
I haven't done a lot yet, but what I've done, I've enjoyed. I've spoken at one library conference, and librarians are, you know, obviously the most passionate about this stuff, especially librarians in their 30s and 40s who often also became readers on the same books that I did and the same books that are covered in Paperback Crush. So it's always... very exciting to talk to them.
So there's this as well for that, the envelope.
What on earth?
Looks like a check. It does look like a check.
Oh my god, it's a check for $10 to cover the shipping.
Oh, that's so sweet. So that's a library in Oregon.
This is a library in Hillsboro, Oregon. Oh my goodness. Are checks even still good after this long? Maybe not. But thank you. Thank you, librarians of Hillsboro, Oregon Public Library.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Now it's time for my steal of the week. Only this week it is hard to steal because it is enormous, heavy, and very difficult to stuff up a jumper. It's Bill Cunningham, On the Street, published by Clarkson Potter. Bill Cunningham was a legendary street-style photographer. He documented every decade from the 70s onwards, capturing its essence, energy and glamour until his death in 2016. The 2010 documentary Bill Cunningham, New York is one of my favourite films. He wasn't a typical fashion photographer. He was a quiet, industrious man, known for his blue overalls and his bicycle. He bore witness to the fabulous while choosing to remain outside the world he portrayed. He was loved by everyone he worked with, and this book is a beautiful testament to his legacy. It's the loveliest thing to look at if you have even a passing interest in style or social history. That's Bill Cunningham, On the Street. Now, back to Gabrielle. Shall we? I keep seeing more like exciting books in that box, but let's go to the study because I keep trying to, and then just finding other things. This is just so dense. It's like such a rich space.
So what are these books here?
So
the situation here, so many of these books are unread. This is kind of my half unread bookshelf. So like
that book up there, Paperback Crush, have you read that?
I've not. I've heard it's good. I'm getting around to it. But so since this is my desk where I write, this shelf up top is mostly my favorite books, things I can imagine pulling down when I'm feeling stuck or want to feel something.
I see a lot of Jane Didion up there.
Yes, yes. I'm a very big Didion fan, which is, I feel like, a cliche for a woman in her 30s living in New York, but I am.
White woman.
Yes, super white woman. Paperback Crush is just up there for when I need to, like, do an interview. It is not one of my favorite books.
Reread it every night. What's, do you have a favorite Jane Didion book? When did you start reading her? How did you meet her?
I started reading Joan Didion when I was a teenager. I used to take, I thought I was very fancy because I took intro to writing classes at the college near me. And in that class, we were given some essays from Slouching Towards Bethlehem. And so that was how I found out about Joan Didion, who I thought was my special secret until I moved to New York as an adult.
Well, and other people have heard of her, what?
And found out she was one of the most popular writers of our century. And I have two copies of Slouching Towards Bethlehem because when I was a very pretentious 23-year-old, I cut out and framed a page from her essay, Goodbye to All That. And then when I came back to it a few years ago, I thought, there is a page missing in this book. So.
What's that Shirley Jackson? But I'm delighted that I can't see what that Shirley Jackson book is because it's obscured by
Simpsons figurines. I am also, this is sort of all of my passions. I'm a passionate fan of early Simpsons. I'm not going to co-sign the last 15 years or so, but and also some horror
figurines.
I think
you might
figurines.
Be like Brooklyn me. I love all the same things.
So the Shirley Jackson books I have here are The Haunting of Hill House and We Have Always Lived in the Castle. My chaotic system here is books I haven't read are on their side, books I have read are upright.
Oh, that's a good idea.
So these are some other Shirley Jackson books I've picked up and not read yet, and then a big biography of her, and I thought I would just read them all in one go, but I have not had that moment yet.
I've just seen a Jane Didion biography down there as
yes.
well, The Last Love Song. Do you have a favorite biography?
So this is my biography and memoir shelf. Let's see, what is the best one of these? God, my favorite of all of these, I mean, this is one of the greatest books of all time.
Oh my God, I just saw that and I'm so happy you picked it up.
The Journalist and the Murderer by Janet Malcolm is a book that I picked up just because I am a mass market true crime goofball. And then it turned out to be one of the best books I've ever read in my life. And it's an amazing, I feel so pretentious saying meditation, but it is kind of a meditation on, you know, what it means to be a writer, what it means to tell stories, to tell someone else's story.
So what is it a story of? Is it a journalist covering a murder?
Yeah, so Janet Malcolm was a writer for The New Yorker, and so she is covering, this is almost like, you know, two steps removed. So there was a guy who was accused of murder named Jeffrey McDonald and a writer named Joe McGinnis who had contracted with him to write a book about his life. And when the book came out, it turned out it was very unsympathetic. Obviously, the guy's a murderer. But Jeffrey McDonald sued Joe McGinnis and said that Joe McGinnis had, you know, lied to him about his intentions. And then Janet Malcolm kind of takes apart the entire thing, sort of not saying that misleading someone in writing is equivalent to murder, but just what are all the moral things going on here? So it is.
That sounds great.
It's a fantastic.
That sounds fantastic.
It's a really fantastic book. Actually, a few of my faves are over here. Let's see, we have Girl Interrupted, which I was rereading recently, which is a great book. Made into a so-so Winona Ryder movie in the 90s. But it is a fantastic book about a woman who is in a mental health facility kind of around the peak of the 60s. So sort of while the world is going on outside, she is sort of trapped in here and kind of looking in internally.
I've not read Party Monster, but I love, one of the books that comes up all the time on the podcast is What I Love by Siri Hustvedt, which is like the sort of fictionalized version of that story.
That is a fictionalized version of that story?
Not entirely, but because I think this is right, I think that her son or her stepdad, someone involved in her life was involved with
Michael Aelig and James St. James. So the Party Monster story kind of runs through the main narrative of What I Loved.
Oh my God, I did not know that at all. I feel so lowbrow that I'm like, that's my motivation to finally read it.
Well, no, because I was like, oh God, What I Love. This is going to be like a dry book about someone looking at a painting. Well, I know, this is cracking.
Oh, but I am a great fan of Party Monster, I think. James St. James is an excellent writer, in addition to having been someone who accidentally got a first-hand look at a very troubling crime.
So does that cover that kind of, like, the world that they're in, sort of, you know, Danceteria?
Oh, yeah.
Is that, how? What's the party to monster ratio?
Heavy party to monster ratio, I'd say it is 3/4 party, only 1/4 monster.
Great, sold!
See, another reason that this is, I'm so chaotic here, so since I'm writing,
just, you can't see this, listeners, but Gabby is throwing all her books at me and like
get
in
out.
My eyes. I'm bleeding.
So because I am working on a memoir, I pulled a lot of my favorite memoirs onto this rolly cart, which is covered in random inspirational items. So we do have the Kat Marnell book. Here, I feel like this is horrible and letting someone into my immensely troubled mind. But I love the Kat Marnell book.
Oh, I've never seen that cover. Yeah. It came out in a different way.
They redid the cover, I think, to make it, I don't know, seem a little more glamorous. Even though I'm like, it has a picture of Kat Marnell in a long evening gown. It's, I would say, a very inaccurate representation of what is in this book.
I think she's in UK Grazia. She did an interview and she's talking about how she recently tried to bleach her hair, or maybe it was a while ago, but she put on like a house bleach and baking soda and then got high and forgot about it, and it's not grown back.
Yeah, I had been reading that she had, I'd been reading interviews with her where she said she had burned her scalp as she was, I follow Kat Marnell quite closely. She had been wearing wigs, you know, sort of very outlandish wigs over the past few years. I hope not years. I hope it started growing back.
Yeah. But you know, at the time of the, I think that interview was pretty recent. So, you know, Kat Marnell, if you're listening, we love you. We hope your hair.
I'm pulling for you.
Something I loved about that book as well is that how she is so in the addiction still. It's not a book where she's like, oh, it was terrible and, you know, no one talks to me anymore and I burned all the houses down. But then I did some yoga and now I'm fine. It's her demons are home still.
That is a thing I loved about this. So a lot of these books that I have pulled, I've pulled a bunch of books for various reasons to kind of consult while I'm working on this book. But one of the things I loved about this is how it's still incomplete. Not that this is a podcast for ripping on books, but the book The Glass Castle by Jeanette Walls is a book. This woman had a sort of very troubled childhood, totally messed up, dysfunctional, terrible parents. And on the last two pages, she's just like, but it's fine now. And I was like, I hate this. You made me hate this book. Now I hate this.
And you just know as well that an editor has come and said, it's a little bleak. Can you just cheer us all up at the end? Love?
Yeah, it just ends with her being like, oh, you know, then my dad, you know, gave me a winter coat. Let me know he was sorry. Like, and I was like, you know, my childhood is not 1/20th of this. And I can tell you that's not how it works.
How is it reading memoirs while writing one? Is it, do you find that there are other people who have such strong voices that it is quite distracting? Or do you find it quite inspiring to know that these details are sort of worthy of writing?
I feel that almost, I'm reading a lot of memoirs now while I'm working on this, and I feel like I'm almost even just reading them to double check that I know how memoirs go. you know, I think it's, I like seeing how everyone does it differently, but I'm also like taking notes like, ah, so you tell the story all in one order, I see. Like flashbacks, annoying, let's cut them out.
I think having written two books that are sort of part memoir, one more than the other, I love that, like, oh, there's no one can say like, oh, you know, your plot's not really working here, these characters are unconvinced, because it's all real. I just have to describe a thing that happened.
But that's what is, I mean, maybe you have advice you can give me after we finish recording. There are so many of, so we have three. This is when it turns into Pepe and Silva, when I take them all apart.
Oh, wow.
So I have thought, hey, it's my life. It can't be that hard to figure out the plot, right? And it turned out it was. And so then I went through about 20 years of my diaries to try to figure out everything that had happened in my relationship with my family. And so I thought that, you know, actually writing, you think you know the narrative of your own life, but you actually, I found it very challenging.
Oh, gosh. Have you always kept a diary? Are you good at kind of journaling? And
I am. I mean, it's always, it had always just felt like a self-indulgence. So it's great to find it actually being a resource now. Although I don't know that I recommend that anyone read their diaries from when they were 18 or 19. It's a little bit of an unpleasant experience.
Do you have any favorite diary books?
Books that are other people's diaries?
Yeah, like Adrienne Mole or Go Ask Alice.
Oh my God, I love Adrienne Mole. I also love Go Ask Alice from like a comedy perspective. It's real unintentional comedy.
Because that's another thing I loved in Paperback Crush. And it's almost like, it's kind of Victorian, isn't it? This, you know, the dissembling. And like, we found this true life diary somewhere. It's very edited. The sentence is very full. There's no like, oh, like cafeteria lunch was terrible today, but like this is all the stuff that happened.
I know, especially reading my own high school diaries now, thinking back on Go Ask Alice, I'm like, I would have 3 pages about like this zit that I thought was going to be the end of my life, but then nothing about actual activities or people I knew. Like, I'm like, this diary is so inaccurate in the way that she has a great grasp of narrative.
What was the most boring entry you found on your own? Was it zip-based?
Oh, man, they're all boring. you know, just when you read them all back to back, you're like, oh, being a human being is quite repetitive in ways we might not be aware of. You know, you have the same problems for a decade and they feel new every time they flare up. And you're like, well, I'm going to figure it out this time.
I loved and still love very much Bridget Jones' diary. Oh, yeah. And I remember trying to write diaries and failing when I was a teenager because I'm like, I just need to go to some bars to have anything to write about. That's what Bridget does.
I could tell in my diaries exactly when I read Bridget Jones's diary because I started referring to things as like, V good, V bad.
Why am I weighing myself every day and writing it down? That is insane.
Yes, I had a few of those and then like, in parentheses next to it, it'd be like, fatter than Bridget Jones, exclamation point, question mark. Like, I mean, isn't that, that's in Sweet Valley High, all of these weight things, all of these women's, and also, why are we constantly being told the weight of female characters?
I don't know that anyone knew. I mean, firstly, I think they must have all been like 12 inches shorter than most humans. And I think it's just in that kind of, you know, like we were talking about this yesterday, like if you have a drink and you're like 16 ounces, oh, that's what like a cat, like, no, it's huge. So I don't think anyone knows what these numbers mean. And it's like, oh, I read a book where they were 120 pounds. So my beautiful heroine must also be 120 pounds.
I mean, you know, I feel like I've had a joke with some of my friends that with male authors, they're just like, well, what does a woman weigh? 120 pounds. But, you know, I feel like always with these female authors, I'm like, what is your excuse for doing this? Why are you doing this? Why on earth would you think we need to know the weight of your character, which is one of the things they changed when they reissued Sweet Valley High. They were originally size 4. I don't know what size that is in the UK, but very, very, very skinny. And when they updated it, they said, oh, no, now they're size 6. So much bigger, so much better.
Oh, shit. Because in the ones that I was reading, which were definitely kind of, you know, late 80s, early 90s, yeah, they were size 6. And I assumed that was UK, which is a size 10, which is, you know, not like it's slim for sure, but it's not skinny. But if they were a UK size 6, oh, God, that changes everything. Skeletal girls. What is that book there on that
which
record?
One? Oh, this one. So this is a book that I feel like I'm the only person on earth who knows about it, probably besides the writer. But this is called The Only Bush I Trust Is My Own by Periel Aschenbrand.
Wow, great name.
Great name. And it's just, this is a really funny book that I found years ago when I was working at Penguin. It was put out by Penguin. And I think kind of seemed like it did not become popular on the level they had hoped, but it is just, nothing really happens in this book, but it is so funny. You know, if
my kind of book,
it's real. You know, this is life stories from a woman who's kind of a bohemian, academic, glamorous layabout in New York City around the turn of the millennium.
It's kind of Eve Babbitt-y, but later.
Yeah, and just very, very, very funny.
That sounds awesome. Did you, when you were at Penguin, did you commission any books?
Well, here's the funny thing about my time at Penguin. You hear the name Penguin and you think of something very classy and very prestigious. But the reality is that publishing companies have many, many, many sections.
I do love the BoJack Horseman joke,
yeah,
Penguin, and how it's like just bare bulbs swinging from the ceiling.
But so I worked in a section that was New Age and self-help.
Oh, fun!
So sometimes I was working on books about, you know, how to get over your fear of public speaking, and sometimes it was books about how to do Reiki on yourself, and occasionally it was a book about, you know, are Wolfmen real?
Are they?
Inconclusive.
I paid $19.99 for this book, and I still don't know if they're real or not. Come on!
That's the problem with those kind of books. That's the problem with your prominent American ghosts. They can't confirm that any of these things are real.
Are there any contemporary writers of the sort of astrology, tarot area that you're enjoying or that you're interested in?
I would say the biggest astrology writer I'm into right now is a woman named Annabelle Gatt.
Oh, she was Broadly, and
she
now
was Broadly.
Just Regular Vice.
Yeah, and she wrote a book recently that was sort of the astrology for dating, but I find that hers is the only horoscope that I will check all the time, and that is actually, like, feels real.
I do love it at the start of the month, and everyone's complaining that Susan Miller is late, because she's always late, and you're like, I'm not paying for your app. Why can't you hurry up with my free horoscope, Susan Miller? Come on.
I was going to say, years ago, I used to be a Susan Miller girl. And then I was just like, I can't wait till the middle of the month to find out what's going on. Susan is a very, very nice person. But I'm sure she's aware that her horoscopes go up in the middle of the month.
Well, I'm very worried because on that website, there's always a long description of like how her health is failing. And I'm like, love, please don't. You know, don't put yourself through this. It sounds painful.
She is an amazing character. I wish she would just write a book about her life. She is a very, very funny, a real New York character. I interviewed her once on the phone and she was like, I'm in the Dunkin' Donuts where I take all my business calls.
Oh, wow. That sounds
I hope I didn't
awesome.
Blow up her spot. I hope people were not supposed to know that.
Oh, like, if you know, yeah. At least two or three.
Yes.
I also have to ask you about another non-book question, which is that Peg Bundy doll on the wall.
I saw a Peg Bundy doll and I thought, I can't not buy it.
You can't not buy it. I love that it's ages 8+. Like, I'm not sure they quite understand the married with children viewer demographic.
I mean, I suppose if you wanted to teach your children about Married with Children, if that was very important for you to educate them on this, you would know that if they were 8 or older, it would be safe. They would not choke to death on this box of bonbons.
Ah, that's what that is.
Yes, or I guess pull off Peg's head and try to eat it. And these are mostly to-be-reads. I should mention also that I am a frequent and aggressive user of my local coffee shop's take a book, leave a book system. So many of these are finds from that.
Oh, you have Pre-Study. I love that book.
I haven't read it yet. I'm very excited to.
It's great, great fun. And I think that's a really good sort of memoir masterclass because it is so weird and so funny. And also what I think is very sweet about it is it's kind of fucked up, you know, that her, when it was like described to him, I was like, your dad sounds like kind of an asshole, but she's actually very, I think, generous, but generous in a sort of knowing way where she's like, I understand there are problems here, but her mum comes out so well at that, but it's so funny and beautiful and funny as well. Oh, I'm so jealous that you get to read that for the first time. What did I see? Oh, yeah. Philip Roth, The Plot Against America. I've never read any Philip Roth. That looks...
I have never read any Philip Roth either. That is definitely from the take a book, leave a book pile. But
so what did you leave last at the
coffee
shop?
What haven't I left? I feel like I go to the take a book, leave a book bookcase sometimes and I'm like, oh no, these are all my books. Like, I gave them all away.
I've only left books. I've not taken any books. can you remember the last book that you brought down there?
Let me, oh my goodness, what would it have been? lately a lot of my contributions to it, and I feel a little guilty because I feel like there's a sacred trust of the take a book, leave a book, but a lot of it has been mystery novels that I have abandoned midway through because they weren't that interesting.
Who are your favorites of that genre?
Oh, I love, and this is, I feel like, it sounds like I'm lying because there's a ton of French book in my unread pile, but ton of French, I think, is my favorite.
How hard is it to read for pleasure when you have to read so much for research?
Oh, it's not hard at all. I feel like it's like one of the only ways I know how to experience pleasure.
I think that's true of all of our guests. Let's go back to this shelf.
Okay.
I see Frances McDormand on the front of High Times.
Oh, yes. Okay. So now we're just going into my doodads. This is Frances McDormand on the cover of High Times.
She looks great.
I know.
Do they make everyone wear that same pot leaf t-shirt?
You know, I would believe that Frances McDormand owned a pot leaf t-shirt. If any of you have a contact with her, please ask her if she was wearing her own shirt.
I'm imagining the studio where they do the shoot, and there's this one slightly stinky shirt on a rail, but everybody's, it's okay, I brought my own.
It is from May 2003. It was before she knew she would be a famous Oscar winner, so she was okay to pose for the cover of High Times.
What would your ill-advised magazine shoot be? Do they ever have humans on the front of Cat Fancy, or is it just cats?
Oh, they did. They do have humans on the cover of Cat Fancy, which I know because Billy Corgan from Smashing Pumpkins, the band from the 90s, was on Cat Fancy a year ago, which was a big topic of discussion in my household.
I really want to track that down. Was he being interviewed, or was he just...
I believe he was being interviewed, but he's also posing on the cover with his cat or cats.
Billy Corgan gets his pussy out.
Sorry.
Who could resist? Who could resist?
Oh, thy neighbour's wife, Gay
Talese Tillesi. Is he the guy who wrote the book about the motel?
Yes.
And the surveillance and the creepy sexy.
Yes, and then there were all those questions about who had given consent to what for the story. But yeah, prior to all of that, you know, Gay Talese was a huge figure in the new journalism scene, and it's one of those, there's some aspirational books on here where I was like, I'm going to become a super smart person one day and want to read these books and not want to read another mystery novel that I found at the free bookshelf at the coffee shop.
I think that they get in your head. I don't think you always need to read them. I think that they, you know, some things just seep through.
But you know, and a lot of the time when once you read them, you're like, this is great. Why did I put this off for 10 years?
This is a book that it looks like you haven't read, but it looks so great. I have to ask you about it. This Gilda Radner, It's Always Something. That's an amazing picture of her on the front.
So for any younger listeners who don't know who Gilda is, she was one of the original cast members of Saturday Night Live, and is just a comedic genius and someone I was raised to love and revere. And so I've had a total fondness for her my whole life. I actually have another book about Gilda that I think Amazing. You guys might be interested in. Let me find it. So this is from my childhood, and my mother, for some reason, had like 10 copies of this that she would just give to bewildered children for their birthday who didn't know what they were getting. It's the Gilda Radner cutout paper doll book.
And it's an authorized edition.
And, you know, she posed for this. This is all of her characters from Saturday Night Live. And my mother must have bought these on sale at one of those places where they liquidate old books. And so, you know, I loved this, but I would be humiliated when I would have to attend someone's 7th birthday party in 1990 and go, happy birthday, here is a book from a comedian I like, but whom you don't know.
Because the trouble with this book, which is beautiful and amazing, is it's very much for fans, isn't it? It doesn't really understand why you would love her if you weren't familiar.
It certainly does not convey it, and certainly does not convey it at a level that your average 7-year-old would understand. So, yeah, it was pretty unpopular.
Huge thanks to Gabrielle. Follow her at Gabby_Moss on social media. And oh my goodness, you must read Paperback Crush. It is essentially the book version of this podcast. If you've ever hidden a copy of Forever under a pillow, it's the book for you.
I'm Daisy Buchanan, and I have been your book inspector. Thank you so much for joining me, fellow shelf obsessives. You can find me on Twitter at NotRollerGirl and on Instagram at TheDaisyBee. Say hello, suggest some guests, and watch out for shelfies. Visit our show page, acast.com/booked, for more information about our guests and a list of the books they have talked about. If you have any other queries about the podcast, you can email us at whybooked@gmail.com. Your Booked is produced by Dale Shaw for New Alaska and hosted by Acast. Please do subscribe, rate us, and leave a review. It's great to hear what you think, and it helps other people to find the podcast. For now, I leave you with this on books from Edgar Allan Poe. I intend to put up with nothing that I can put down. See you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.